thank you all for inviting me here again today. It's great to be here. It's really looking forward to this. And Herodias is our topic for this morning. And in my head, I was calling her Horribleness instead of Herodias. That's what she seems like to me. And so I thought it would be good to kind of just analyze how she looked at herself. Like, what were some of her qualities? What were some of Herodias' qualities? And we can all agree that she was ambitious, right? She decided that Philip wasn't going to be enough for her, so she divorced him and married his brother, Herod. I would say Herodias was determined. She was very determined to get her way. And you can see that when she married Herod and was just simply for the better prospects. She was, according to the reading we have, she was enraged. She was enraged at John the Baptist, so she must have had a temper, and she was ruthless and vengeful, as we can see by her behavior. She was opportunistic because she took this moment where Herod was in the midst of all of his colleagues and friends to set him up to get what she wanted. And Herodias was seemingly unremorseful for her behavior. We don't really know what happened to her after the situation, but for purposes of today, we'll talk about the fact that she showed no remorse for basically placing her daughter in a scandalous position and then tricking her husband into doing away with John the Baptist, who in Matthew 11:11, Jesus said was the greatest man ever born to a woman. And because of that behavior, we can definitely say that Herodias was deaf to the truth. She was deaf to the truth of John the Baptist. She was deaf to all kinds of truth. She didn't have ears to hear, as Jesus says in the Gospel of Mark about 8 or 9 times. Herodias was the perfect example of someone who doesn't have ears to hear. Now, ironically, Herodias probably thought she was a pretty good and smart and talented woman, right? If you were able to talk with her, she might be really happy to share with you that she justified her ambition and her determination because maybe she was seeking the good of Herod. Maybe she was seeking his good as well as hers. Maybe she really wanted the good of his people. And since Philip couldn't reign with the same power, she rationalized that Herod would be a better leader. And maybe she felt she was right to be enraged by John the Baptist because he was humiliating her in public. And she was, after all, Herod's wife. And that was uncalled for, wasn't it? And she might have said that she was rational and very pragmatic because she took advantage of Herod's vanity. She knew his weaknesses. And when she sent her daughter to dance for him, she knew probably how he would react, especially with considering all of the wine he'd been drinking. And then I think Herodias might have said that she was smart and talented because she succeeded in getting what she wanted without stepping into the limelight. She was stayed in the background, and she let her daughter and her husband do the work that she wanted, which was the murder of John the Baptist. She seemed to have absolutely no guilt for her behavior. How could she be so wrong at assessing her behavior? How could that be possible? I think in Ephesians 4:17-19, we hear, "So I tell you this, and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do, in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed." So they lost all sensitivity to sin. And Herodias is probably one of those people who had lost all sensitivity to sin. That just shows us that there are consequences to the behaviors that we choose to do. St. John Chrysostom says, "A man who does not reflect on his actions is like a traveler who journeys in darkness." Herodias' sin was what the church calls a mortal sin, which is a very serious sin, a sin of grave matter, and a sin extremely intentional. She knew exactly what she was doing. She knew exactly what she wanted. And she had no regard for God's will or what was right. Hopefully, that's not any of us in this room, right? But we do commit what the church calls venial sins, little pet things. Remember the C.S. Lewis book, The Great Divorce, where he has a lizard on his shoulder. He won't let the lizard go. It's his pet sin. It's his favorite thing of all time. Those kinds of sins, we have a hard time shedding. We have a hard time getting rid of. So we're all really guilty of venial sin. The Gospels say that the just man sins seven times a day. So seven times a day, if we're just, we can say, yeah, we did that. But there are still consequences to venial sin. St. Augustine says, do not say it's only a venial sin. What does that mean? It is a disease of the soul, though not a mortal one. If you neglect the wound, it may become deadly. So he says it leads us, and it can lead us into mortal sin. St. Teresa of Avila, the doctor of the church in prayer, she says, while venial sin does not completely separate the soul from God, it weakens the divine friendship and impedes the reception of his grace. So again, it kind of deadens our receptivity to grace. St. Jose Maria Escriva says, venial sin cools the soul's love for God, and when love grows cold, the soul is left vulnerable to grave sin. And St. Bonaventure, finally, he says, the more the soul indulges in venial sin, the more its understanding becomes darkened, and it loses sight of the beauty of virtue. So Herodias, if we'd asked her, might have concluded that her behavior was virtuous. She had lost sight of the real meaning of virtue. She was really happy with herself, talented, pragmatic, all those things that she would have said about herself probably. So very few people start out committing these serious, serious sins. And according to these saints, we start out committing lesser sins. And then we allow those lesser sins to become these lizards on our shoulders, which darkens our intellect, which makes us less receptive to grace. And so how can we prevent this from happening to us? How do we do that? And that's what I'd like to talk to you about today. Self-knowledge. How can we tell we are not deceiving ourselves? How do we know whether our actions please God or whether we are actually deaf and dumb and blind to his will or the consequences of our sin? One of the first graces God gives us when we return to him, when we convert, turn our hearts back to him, or even when we reconvert or constantly convert our hearts to him, one of the graces he gives us is this capacity to know ourselves better. In the Catechism of the Catholic Church, number 27, it says, the desire for God is written in the human heart because man is created by God and for God, and God never ceases to draw man to himself. Only in God will he find the truth and happiness he never stops searching for. So I see in spiritual direction, people who are just beginning to pray, they come and they have received so much spiritual candy. That's what I call it. Little coincidences, little circumstances in their life where God shows up. They're starting to see with these rose-colored glasses. They're starting to see the world and God's action in their life. It is such a beautiful moment. And along with that, he is really working on their self-knowledge. They're starting to see his beautiful action in their life, and they're starting to see where they are failing. And it's a kind of a dance in the beginning, because we don't want them to be discouraged by their failings and faults that they're noticing. And we want them to continue to be really enthused and full of hope that God will continue to act in their life. It's a really beautiful moment. That's God's work. But there are some tools that we can use, that we can learn, that we can teach ourselves to help us to understand ourselves better and our patterns of behavior. And Melissa and I spoke, and she's very excited to share some of these tools on a very deep level at the retreat on May 1st is the date for the retreat at the end of the year. But I thought it would be good to introduce you to one of them today. And then maybe you could work it and practice it a little bit between now and the retreat so that you can really go deep when the retreat comes. And what I'd like to talk to you about this morning is the concept of root sin. Are you familiar with this? Just familiar with it. So I'd like to define root sin, and then I'd like to discuss how to go deeper in the diagnostics of root sin for ourselves. And then I'd like to place it in the context of the spiritual life overall. Okay. So first, root sin is the primary disposition that motivates us to do something sinful. It's the primary place in our heart. It's the way that we look at the world. It's our knee-jerk reaction. It's our id, you know, the one that just like launches forward to get what it wants. And there are three primary root sins: pride, vanity, and sensuality. So if we have the roots, we all have one. God made us that way, the original sin, right? We're all fallen angels. We all have one root sin: pride, vanity, or sensuality. If we have the root sin of pride, we have placed ourselves in the center of our hearts where God belongs. And it's mostly I want this, I want that, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. That's the way we look at our lives. If we have the root sin of vanity, we are placing others in the center of our heart. I really want to please him. I really want to make sure she likes me. I really want to do this well. Those are dispositions that can lead to sin that say that someone else besides God is in the center of our hearts. And if we have the root sin of sensuality, we place things in that center of our heart where God belongs. I really need that glass of wine. I really want some extra sleep. I really, whatever it is that you're seeking. And, you know, in the very difficult to sacrifice. Now, this work of discerning our root sin is heavy work. It requires us to take a look inside. It requires us to take an honest look at our failures and our repetitive, you know, habits. It's hard, but you'll learn at the retreat that it's all a process toward discerning a virtue that will be the absolute antidote to your root sin. And once you do that work of diagnosing your root sin and looking at your sinfulness in general, we focus on the virtue. It's all positive. Now, we're going to get at that here at the retreat, but for now, we're going to just talk about the root sin. So it might feel a little heavy, but just keep in mind that as you're looking at this, your own patterns of behavior, you're going to be thinking about, what virtue did I lack there? What virtue do you need to live? And from there, at the retreat, we'll launch forward and think only of virtue, and we'll talk more about that. So I'm going to go through some common manifestations of these three root sins. Feel free to jot some things down if they jog your memory. As you listen, ask yourself, am I doing these things? Is this me? And we'll see where we go. So the common manifestations of pride, and this is where I am in the center of my life. Generally, I have a high opinion of myself. I get annoyed with those who contradict me. I have short fuse. I'm angry if I don't get my way or I'm not taken into account. I can very easily judge. I put others down. I like to gossip. I'm slow to recognize my own mistakes or to see when I hurt others. And I have a hard time asking for forgiveness. I have anger when others don't thank me for favors. I'm unwillingness to serve. I rebel against what I don't like. I can be impatient, brusque in my daily contact with others. I think I'm the only one who knows how to do things right. I am generally unwilling to let other people help. Maybe a little micromanaging. I can have an inflated idea of my own intelligence and understanding and capacities. I sometimes don't feel a need for God. Even though I say prayers, it's hard for me to connect. I don't like taking orders. I'm generally not a team player. I'm calculating in my relationships with God and with others. So when you look and you see these behaviors, you can feel how heavy it is. It's kind of like, oh, yeah, that you, yeah, I, and that's me too. And that's me too. So, but fear not. We're going to get to the other side. Okay, common manifestations of vanity. And this is when you tend to put others where God should be in your heart. I seek admiration and praise from others, and I worry when I don't get it. I could be excessively concerned about my physical appearance. I allow myself to be guided by the opinions of others rather than principle. This is sometimes called human respect. Some types of shyness are actually this root sin of vanity. Not speaking up. I sacrifice my principles in order to fit in, especially in social conversations or situations. I place too much a premium on popularity and acceptance. I'm very easily discouraged at my failures, and I'm embarrassed. I take pleasure in listening to gossip and hearing about others. I want to be the center of attention, and at times I stretch the truth. Or I can even lie outright or be uncharitable in my words in order to achieve this. So those are the common manifestations of vanity. And then last, these common manifestations of sensuality. And this is where we put things in our heart where God should be. Laziness, inconstancy, and distractedness. Always doing the most comfortable and what requires the least effort. Not going the extra mile for others. Procrastinating, this is a big one. Complaining, excessively affected by minor discomforts. An inability to sacrifice. Not doing my duty. Expecting everyone else to serve me. Daydreaming. Only doing what I enjoy, choices of food and work. Uncontrolled and overpowering curiosity, wanting to see and experience everything and every pleasure. My senses and impulses overrule what I know is right and wrong. I act out my feelings with no regard for my conscience, God, or others. I only work with those I like and I'm easily hurt. I can never finish what I start. So that's sensuality. So can you see why it takes some serious reflection to discern what is your primary root sin? It can really feel like we're all three. And in fact, this pattern is like a three-pronged rope, or whatever you call it, three-part rope. We really are all three. But there is one primary motivation. And I have an example I'd like to share with you of my two sons. So we were at a basketball game. They're older now, but we were at a basketball game. And the free throw line, the guy was shooting at the free throw line. And my son on my right said, he missed. The guy missed. The son on my right said, what an idiot. At the same time, the son on my left said, how embarrassing. So can you see, like, this is the proud guy and this is the vain guy. He saw the miss of the free throw as an embarrassment. That's the filter with which he looks at everything in the world. That's what root sin is. It's the filter with which we look at everything in the world. And this guy on this side was like, what an idiot. He lost the game for us. We really needed this game. Sure, he was right. You know, so if that's kind of how it plays out in real life. Now, again, this can be heavy work. How do we get to root sin? How do we get to understanding our root sin? The first thing we can do is just pray for light. Pray for light and inspiration from God. He wants us to know, because once we know, we can really attack it. And then, I don't know how many of you get the silent retreat, but the retreats I've been on, there's a habit of doing what they call a general confession. It's a very good way of looking at root sin. And the general confession is just a long and extended preparation to confess all of your sins of your whole life. And when you really reflect it that way, and you look at like when I was 20, when I was 30, when I was 40, you start to see patterns, real patterns of behavior, real patterns of sinfulness. And that's so helpful in looking at what your root sin might be. So a retreat's a good time to take a look. And then there's spiritual direction. And this is the third set of eyes in your life. So God and you are walking along, and the spiritual director is helping you to discern what you're saying, what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you're seeing. And over time, I mean, it usually doesn't happen in one spiritual direction. Over time, maybe over 6 months, if you're interested, if you are always the protagonist in spiritual direction. So if you're interested and you are looking into root sin, over time with your spiritual director, you can discern. Now, placing this in the context of our spiritual life overall, why do we care? Why is this important? The first and most helpful, I think, way of using this knowledge is when we do what we call a daily examine. I don't know whether you end your days or not. I do, with a thought of like, okay, Lord, where were you today in my life? I always like to think that the Lord gives us 12 roses a day. He gives us a bouquet of roses. So I always look for those at the end of the day, like, where were the roses? And boy, it's really beautiful to see that. That is part of the daily examine. The other part is, where did I fail you, Lord? Where did I fail you? And this is where you start to see manifestations of sin, right? Oh, yeah, I gossiped today. Or, oh, yeah, I was at the airport the other night and our flight was late and I just ran right forward. I just ran right forward to get in the front of the line. And later I was like, yeah, that wasn't good. I had to follow the other people that were with me in the desk. Those kinds of things. You look at the end of the day and you say, oh, yeah, that wasn't good. Sorry, Lord, help me tomorrow. So you are looking at all those in your examine. And St. Basil the Great says, let us examine our daily lives. For only knowing our faults can we grow in virtue. This is the root. This is the basis of knowing your root sin. This exercise is not about dwelling on ourselves or getting down on ourselves or getting discouraged. This exercise is about learning what virtues can most help us to grow in sanctity. And then this examine that we do nightly is a good preparation for confession, right? So that's one way of using it. And then knowing our root sin, knowing our own root sin, knowing our own patterns of behavior really gives us a beautiful compassion for other people. You know, if we start to see patterns in our own behavior, we can start to see patterns in other people's behavior. And instead of feeling judgmental or knowing, oh, there they go again, especially close family members, when you have worked against a root sin and you have prayed about it, you have confessed, you are striving really hard to live this virtue. Oh my gosh, you are so compassionate toward others because you really see that it's hard work and it takes grace. So you're much less judgmental. Not only that, but trying to live virtue brings us an exceptional gratitude for what God has done in our lives. Because what tends to happen is we pick a virtue, we try to live it, we fail, we fail, we fail, we fail. And we get a little discouraged and we wonder, am I ever going to grow in this virtue? And then all of a sudden, something else comes out of your mouth that's like not a toad or a lizard. It's like something beautiful that comes out of your mouth and you're like, where did that come from? And that night you say, Lord, what a beautiful rose you gave me today. And you realize, oh, he is at work. He is at work in my heart. And so that's how we grow in gratitude with him. Pope Benedict XVI said, there are hours of darkness, hours of alarm at oneself. But there is also the dawning of the insight that Christ's power is greater than our helplessness. His mercy is greater than our failure. And in this consoling certainty, we wish to leave this hour joyful that we have had the privilege of being his servants and that we can thereby do the greatest thing that is possible. Be possessed by eternal salvation. Be possessed by the kingdom of God. So it's just really, it's a beautiful process. Now, in close, we're going to talk about root sin on the retreat. But between now and then, if you are doing an examine, if you are taking a look at your sinfulness, if you are reflecting interiorly, if you are praying for light and inspiration, if you have a spiritual director and you're talking to them about it, and you have discerned your root sin, you can launch right in at the retreat on the virtue and on living the virtue and on ways that you can live the virtue, living it in your heart, living it with others, living it with God. And that's where we really take these catapults, like leaps, huge leaps in our spiritual life. So we have to do this hard work between now and then, and then when we get there, it should be a really natural and easy process to start the positive, start the working on the virtue. And I just want to close with two quotes. One's from St. Augustine. He says, return into yourself, for in the inner man dwells truth. So look deeply. And then St. Benedict says, daily examination of conscience is the path to holiness and wisdom. Thank you.
Chris, could you close this in prayer?
Mm-hmm. Dear Lord Jesus, you know how disinclined we are to want to look at our faults and failures. And you know, Lord, that we either get discouraged or we presume on your mercy. You know all these things, Lord. You know how helpless we are. We trust in you. We count on your grace. We know that you love us. Deepen our understanding of how much you love us. Let not one day go by where we don't have a greater appreciation of your love for us.
Amen. Thank you. That was so good.